Coming up in this week, computer hardware, Samsung 840, 840 Evo drives slowing down over time. What? Acer's affordable 4K G-Sync gaming monitor, Oculus Crescent Bay, Haswell E loves Linux, and more. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 286, recorded September 25th, 2014. Samsung 840 and 840 Evo are losing speed. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Harry's. For the guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code TWITCH when you check out. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most informative, most delightful, and most engaging news about computer hardware, desktops, laptops, tablets. We even like cell phones in the off weeks. Joining me today, not Mr. Ryan Shrout, who's apparently verbally engaged with the NVIDIA and EVGA people right now, but Josh Walworth from PCPer.com, currently located, ladies and gentlemen, somewhere in Wyoming.
And it's not sunny here.
Is it officially... Have you guys officially hit the sort of winter phase?
We've had a nice fall so far. We thought it was going to be bad. Second week of September, it snowed. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly it just had 2 weeks of in the 70s of lovely, lovely weather with very little wind. Which, nice. Southeast Wyoming.
Is a big deal.
It's a much big
like
deal.
Northeastern Nevada, like, why is there 40 knots of wind? Because it's between October and March. Oh.
But the aspens are all gold and still have their leaves, so.
That's the best sound ever.
It is.
The walk under the aspens. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to defer to the guest today. What's the most exciting story for you this week? There's some actually really interesting stuff going on. Given that it's everything's sort of relaxing after the week of cell phones and iPhone 6 and IDF and suddenly.
You know, it's got to be the GTX 970 and 980. NVIDIA's done some really interesting things without having a new process node to rely upon. And so that so far has been one of the more interesting stories. That and the precipitous drop of the stock exchange after it hit a record high. That was all you're doing, wasn't it?
Yes.
I shorted everything.
Yes, that's because I'm actually secretly the wealthiest man in the universe. And I play with the stock market because it's Tuesday.
The Koch brothers hate him.
No. Let's not even go there. Don't open that can of worms. It'll get ridiculous quickly. Actually, if I were a billionaire, I wouldn't be so excited about this. Have you guys heard about this? I know Burke has. I think Burke was panting about it earlier. This thing right here, thermal.com is a website. Seek is the name. And it is an actual, I mean, a lot of people were excited. Did you see the FLIR 1, the iPhone 5 add-on at CES, Josh?
I did not.
Oh, man. So basically, it was a $350 back that slides onto an iPhone 5S. And what we're looking at right here, there's one for Android. There's one for any of the iPhones with a Lightning connector. And it's crazy because it's essentially a $200 thermal imaging camera. So if you pull it up, so I kind of have found this stuff fascinating ever since we installed one of FLIR's Pathfinders into my truck for an episode of System 1,000 years ago. And it allows you essentially night vision, right? Because it's doing thermal differentiation.
Down terrorists? Were you launching Hellfire missiles at anyone?
Do you ever have one of those nights on a small highway in Wyoming where all of the coyotes try to stuff themselves underneath your truck?
Yes.
My interest in, so, you know, this is relatively close range stuff, but what we're looking at right here is it's a tough environment indoors during the day because our office is actually about 75 degrees. But what that is a bunch of people walking down the hallway. And what's crazy is you can have a pitch black room. That's the obligatory picture of someone's hand before they leave the handprint. But what you're looking at, these images, because it's not measuring visible light waves, but infrared light waves, you can basically see in a perfectly black room. You're not going to see as much detail as you would sort of with a, you know, 2 or 3 megapixel camera.
So essentially, Jodie Foster would have killed for this back in 1988.
Oh, yeah.
Or whatever year that was, 92.
Well, it's funny. So you see that right there. So this is one of our editing rooms, right? And the editing rooms sit next to these huge windows, and they get up to like 100 degrees. So we have standalone, those sort of roll-in AC units. This is the hose walking out of the AC unit. If I put this into temperature mode, that hose will measure between 95 and 105 degrees. And right over here, we have a basic human body running at like 97, 98.6. But what's crazy about this is, whether you're using this to look at sort of the thermal imaging from a building, let me pull this back. The even used, you know, like a 5 or 8 year old handheld thermal imaging camera, like the kind that you see contractors carrying, is crazy, right? So right there, you're looking at basically the heat loss inside of the building. Okay, that's the security aspect. Is there somebody in the backyard? And it's kind of trippy when you realize that, you know, you can't see anyone, but they glow really brightly on the market. Oh. Somebody's been walking through the house. Somebody was apparently using this in the beta phase to tell whether or not their dog had been sleeping on the couch.
I think that's actually Velociraptor tracks.
I hate Velociraptor tracks.
I know.
This is, let's see, that is the classic northbound cat from the southbound view. But that was basically pitch black. Couldn't see the cat at all in the backyard until I shot the image at it. And it's interesting because this is, we've never seen anything like this at this price range. The, you know, thermal imaging camera is typically selling, even used, a couple, 3, 4 years old for like $1,000 on eBay. New, I think a Pathfinder, which is a higher resolution, like 320 by 240 sensor, is somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,500. And that's a kit you have to install yourself. So this is pretty crazy. $200 for Android, $200 for iPhone, $199. Orders are up now at thermal.com. I'm fascinated by it. I'm also sort of, you know, I am really, really into figuring out where the thermal loss in my house is, and people are using them for hunting and for looking for animals while they're camping. It's interesting, and it's cheap. For what this is literally like a tenth of the price of anything out there other than the FLIR one, and the FLIR one is only going to work with an iPhone 5 or 5S. So I'm pretty excited about this. We'll see what we can hack this into on an episode of Die Trying in the near future. I also want to see more resolution. And the software is in beta, but they're doing a pretty good job of updating it. I'm kind of curious to see how well it works because they're claiming the thermal, basically when you put it into the temperature mode, so if I actually get the application to come up and there's an actual temperature mode. Well, did I mention it's in beta?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there we go. So if you put it into the thermal mode, it'll take a temperature. And they're claiming within an accurate of a degree, which is pretty good for a $200 piece of software that's in beta. But oh, let's see if we can get, there we go. And the wall is not nearly as hot, although it's still hotter than heck in this office. But yeah, that's, yeah,
that's really cool.
I'm really excited about this, but I've also been playing about the like playing with these and not being able to afford them for like 8 years now. I'm like, yes, there's one I can afford and still feed.
Well, it's gonna be great for, you know, people who want to like see hotspots on a motherboard. You just take a picture right with that $200 thing instead of, I remember when a non-tech got some $3,500 FLIR thing that they're excited about. It's like $200, dude.
It's great. Actually, I could have sworn I had a picture of a keyboard in here. Although you can see the windows just losing heat on my neighbor's house right there. They're still tuning the software. That's not my favorite image. It's also amazing when you realize how much heat is held in by concrete.
Yeah, there's a lot of thermal density there.
That's a sidewalk at night. And then, yeah. The steps on the fronts of houses just retain an absolute massive amount of heat. Thermal mass is cool, man. Should I take a keyboard shot really quickly?
Take a keyboard shot real quickly.
Ladies and gentlemen, the MacBook Air.
Will this show off your usual password keys?
You know, it's interesting when you say that. You would have to be, there it is, in terms of an actual laptop keyboard. So I don't know if you can see that, but it's running 100 degrees. I've seen them as high as 105 degrees in our office playing around with it. So that's a MacBook Air keyboard. I don't think your password's going to show up very well unless all of your keys are down at the bottom half of the, the bottom half of the keyboard. I have not had a chance to walk up to a banking, an ATM machine yet, but I will do that after this show and hopefully not get arrested in the process, because the SFPD, they tend to be cranky when they're cranky. Not that I would know anything about that, but Seek is the name of the device. Thermal.com is the website. They're taking orders now. So I'm excited about that. So what happened with, Tom Peterson from NVIDIA stopped by the PC Per office today?
That is correct. Tom came by to talk about the recently released GTX 980 and 970. They spoke about the architecture. He answered a bunch of questions about the product and where it's being placed. And he also did some other, you know, non-GTX, video card type questions. G-Sync is, of course, a very, very popular topic to discuss. And so he provided quite a few insights into that. Tom is always a really interesting guy to talk to. He's one, he's incredibly smart. Two, he can take complex, not issues, but concepts. I speak very well this evening. He takes complex concepts and he can boil them down simple enough that most people can understand. And so he's kind of a joy to have. He's funny. And, the GTX 900 series look to be really, really good. These are based on the Maxwell architecture. The first one we saw was the GTX 750 and 750 Ti. What was interesting about those parts is, it was a small die size, pulled very little power, very, very efficient, but performed much higher than one would expect. See, one of the big problems that the graphics guys have gone through is that 3 years ago, a little bit more, maybe 3.5, the first 28 nanometer parts came out. And as you know, with especially graphics, when they do process node jumps, they get more performance, they get better power efficiency. All of these really wonderful things come very, very simple for them because they have these easy jumps. I mean, every 16 to 18 months, you had a new process node that you could rely upon to refresh your entire product line. Well, this is not the case. We've had 28 nanometer for quite a few years, and it's not going to go anywhere anytime soon. And so NVIDIA had to really think about the products, redesign them, put some interesting ideas and concepts into play that they learned from their Tegra K1 products. Now, of course, they also are dabbling in the ARM sphere. And so that, of course, is a very, very power efficient architecture because, you know, it's running all of our cell phones. So they were able to take a lot that they've learned from the K1, which is probably their most advanced ARM SoC yet, and they were able to apply them to these big GPUs. And so they have a product that is slightly bigger than the old GTX 680, and which was also renamed the GTX 770. It runs about 25 watts lower in overall TDP, but it outperforms the much larger, much higher TDP GTX 780 Ti, which is still another 28 nanometer part, but that's a 250 watt part. It's almost 600 millimeters square in size. So you've got this little GTX 980 that is about 390 millimeters, 398, I think I heard, 165 to 175 watts TDP, and it outperforms it. And in fact, it outperforms everything out there. It is the fastest single-chip graphics card period, in the world, and one of the most advanced. And so they added a couple of new anti-aliasing techniques, which, you know, for a guy who likes AA like me.
You don't like Jaggies?
I don't like the Jaggies at all. I was really excited about anti-aliasing when 3DFX introduced it with the Voodoo series. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've only grown to love it from then on out. So, overall, these are fantastic parts. The GTX 980 is released for $549. You can still get it online. It's still in stock in some places. The GTX 970 is probably the more interesting one. It's got, you know, fewer shader cores. It's less powerful. It's a lower TDP. Mm-hmm. But it's only $329, and it outperforms pretty much the R9 290 and the older GTX 780. Notice I didn't say GTX 780 Ti. That's, of course, a higher-end SKU that's a whole lot more money. So, overall, NVIDIA's kind of taken a stab at a better price performance than we've seen them do in a long time. Usually, they've gone ahead and kept their parts up in terms of price as compared to AMD, who is, you know, more known as the price performance leader. Mm-hmm. With the GTX 970, they're really hitting the sweet spot. It's a 4 gig card, runs really super fast. It outperforms previous generation stuff, and it sips power as compared to other cards. And again, this is a 28 nanometer part. They haven't done anything exceptional with the process. It's all been design. And of course, when you're dealing with what, some 5 billion transistors, you've got some leeway to do some things there.
And they did them.
They did.
Oh my goodness. I'm looking at, I was looking at Newegg now. I'm on Amazon.com. Asus Strix GTX 970 temporarily out of stock. MSI GTX 970 temporarily out of stock. For $430, the Gigabyte GeForce GTX 970 for $430, three left in stock.
Yeah, they're only gouging you a little bit with that.
Well, if they're in stock.
Earlier I saw Newegg had some about 4 hours ago, but I guess that stock is now again depleted. So these are good cards, and they're not overpriced as compared to what we have seen in the past.
That was kind of like it was a pleasant surprise. Like, I can't decide if NVIDIA feels like they can just beat on AMD and they went with that pricing, or if, you know, it just kind of fascinates me.
Well, there's two things. One, the die size on this is not much bigger than what the GTX 680, GTX 770 were. It's still a 256-bit bus, and so PCB costs are less. You have less complexity on the PCB. There's fewer, you know, traces and ball grids on the GPU. All these things kind of come together to help drive the cost down, because it's not as expensive as, say, like the GTX 780, which has a 384-bit bus and has a GPU that is, again, 550 to 600 millimeters squared. So, I mean, that's some serious savings for a part that performs as well, if not a little bit better, than the previous top-end single GPU card.
It's interesting. I was reading Ryan's review of the Acer XB280HK. He says, as he cribs from the screen to his right, so it's 28-inch 4K gaming monitor, G-Sync. He loves this monitor, and I was laughing, like, because we were talking like, when will 4K gaming get more affordable? So now you can use the bare minimum graphics configuration to run the XB280HK G-Sync monitor is a single GeForce GTX 980 or an SLI configuration of GTX 780 or 780 Ti. So $800 for the monitor, which is not bad. It was interesting though, because even with he used a pair of GeForce GTX 980 cards in SLI, and even then with a Sandy Bridge 6-core processor, 16 gigabytes DDR3, Crysis 3 wouldn't run until they went down to medium settings, and dropped MSA anti-aliasing down from 4x to 2x. And that got them to 40 to 55 frames per second. Metro last night, Battlefield 4 running under 60 frames per second for most of our playtime. He's excited about this monitor.
He likes 4K. We had a discussion about that last night. He would rather have a 4K monitor. I would rather have a 1440p that is 144 hertz G-Sync. But he's the opposite. He would rather have that 4K really really tight pixel spacing and lots of pixels. But boy, you got to have some horsepower to drive that.
Yeah. That's a pretty expensive system he was running, running to power that beast. Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's been interesting. We were laughing. We did this low end gaming PC build and people are like, the 750 Ti, it's worthless. And I'm like, dude, what are you gaming on? You know?
Yeah.
Cause 1080p gaming doesn't take that much.
It does not anymore. Now, I think what's kind of interesting is, do you remember some of the first widescreen LCDs that came out? It was around 2003, 2004.
Yes.
$1,100 to $1,500 a pop. And you're talking 1920 by 1200. And right. Then the new 30 inches came out. They were 2560 by 1600. Again, they were introduced at $1,100 to $1,500. And the 4K monitors, the first ones, that really super expensive Asus, $3,200. And now we've got G-Sync based 4K monitors. Admittedly, it's using that TN panel, which is not perfect, but it is a huge step up from traditional TN panels. 4K G-Sync, $800.
That's pretty amazing.
We're living well.
It's a shame that the glass isn't a little bit better, because that would be a huge monitor for people who live in Photoshop and video editing and who can actually take advantage of all those pixels.
Yeah, and it's rated at 98% RGB, sRGB. So it's much better than it used to be. You still apparently the weakness of it is if you try to go portrait mode, the bottom portion, which is now on your left-hand side, it gets dark. I mean, it does have the color shift.
Right.
And if you look, go down here and you look at it, then you'll notice that the colors do shift. It's not as bad left to right and from the top, but it still has that whole TN thing that if you're looking at it from below, it looks just kind of funky.
Funky. Man, that Asus PB278Q, $478, although it's only a mere 60 hertz at 2560 by 1440. I assume you would be going for the Asus Swift, the 2560 by 1440, 144 hertz.
It's apparently a fantastic product.
All you do is sell them a truck and buy a monitor. Won't the wife be thrilled? Oh, my goodness. Phoronix, ladies and gentlemen, got crazy. They were trying to do Haswell Eon Linux a week or two ago. Their X99 motherboard ate its own tail, released the magic smoke, and died, much to their chagrin. It turns out, however, when you don't kill your motherboard, and when your motherboard doesn't die on you, I'm not assigning any blame to anyone at Phoronix, please don't take offense, having released the magic smoke from several motherboards myself. Apparently, Linux loves Haswell E.
I think pretty much everything loves Haswell E.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Like when I think might be my new favorite benchmark ever is the timed Linux kernel compilation version 3.1. So the Intel Pentium G3258. I think it's like, is that 70 seconds? No. Sorry, I'm going to have to like make the chart bigger because apparently it's time for me to get reading glasses.
Mm.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
You're only what, like 47?
44 actually.
44, you're only 2 years older than me.
It's been an ugly 20 years. You'd be shocked. 9 years of rugby advanced a lot of things. Yeah, it's crazy. 42nd kernel compile. Compared to like a Core i7-5960X, which is like 210 seconds. In any case, if you are a Linux user, there is no reason not to spend all of the money on an X99 and a Haswell E. Are you over Oculus
kinda,
yet?
You know what's kind of, I like, go back to this other one. Do you know what's kind of ironic about that benchmark?
What's that?
That it does so fast and so well. But if you remember the old Pentium 3 1133, what did they get nailed on? The Linux compile benchmark. So Intel's come a long ways.
They've accepted Linux and the other Unisys and FreeBSD. Oh my goodness. Have you are you excited about Oculus still at this point?
You know,
the Crescent Bay prototype that came out?
Yeah, it's supposed to be a lot better. But you know, I think they still have that whole little grid problem because of the optics. But you know, this one's got the integrated headphones and sound. It's got the external dots so that if you have, you know, cameras out there, it'll do head tracking a lot more effectively. And so they're not going to probably put this one out for sale, but it is, you know, a kind of a development kit that I think they will probably sprinkle about. But I, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm thinking for my waistline, it would be nice to have one of those. And then that thing where you stand in and you run and shoot things, that would be nice for me. It probably wouldn't be nice for my family as I'm running through my office and shouting obscenities and Counter-Strike as people are shooting me and camping and hacking. So
I've noticed that about Counter-Strike. Counter-Strike players may be the most blasphemous players I've ever been in an office with.
Ever. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. What do you think about the VR stuff?
I keep having trouble because I've seen it so many times over the last 20 years, and it sucks less than it ever has before. At this point, I'm really curious. I'm curious to see if, because, you know, now that they are inside of Zuckerman land, that they're inside of Facebook, that they can kind of take as long as they need to perfect this. And I'm kind of curious if they're going to do that, because they're obviously, like, you know, Samsung is playing around with, you know, Google's playing around with their sort of cardboard box VR system. Samsung's releasing a headset. All these other companies are starting to join in. So I'm really kind of curious to see what they're going to do. You know, I've heard, you know, one friend of mine who was instantaneously vomiting on the first round, much like Ryan, you know, got to see one of the second round products, or get eyes on one of the second round products, and they had improved it considerably. So he could go several minutes before he wanted to run to the nearest garbage can. I'm really curious, you know, whether it's going to be something where you just look around and pretend you have 19 monitors, or if it's going to be something where it's really practically engaging for long periods of time.
You know why Zucker, what's his bucket, bought this in the first place? Obviously, he has read the things like Neuromancer and Snow Crash. Where you actually have
sun.
Yeah, maybe, but it is the next step to Facebook. You put these on, you're in a room with all your friends. You're going to go and walk and down the street, and all these other people you know will just, you'll have face to face visits. You'll go to a bar that is you know, populated by people from Australia, New Zealand, and England, and Scotland, and all these other places, and it's going to, you know, hopefully it'll be nice enough and 3D graphics will be more photorealistic, and that you'll just be there. I can't remember the last, you know, kind of, you know, VR book that I read. Oh, it was just a couple of years ago. But, yeah, it was, you know, make it so realistic and interactive that's where he's looking at. It's not just games. He's looking to integrate that product into social media to take it to the next level. It's where Second City wanted to be, but just never could.
It's just a little early for that one. Yeah. I mean, somebody was in the office like, why did Facebook buy it? And all I could think was virtual makeouts, Snapchat in 3D. I got the most piteous stare. And then they were like, oh, God.
It's the next million-dollar idea. Yeah.
Oh, man. What's going on with USB 3.1 or 31?
3.1. You know, this is the new USB connection that is reversible. So as the joke goes, you don't have to plug in your USB cable three times to get it correct. It'll just go in the WAN. And what they're doing is not only is it USB 3.0, but they're adding DisplayPort to it. So DisplayPort will be integrated in, and it can handle 100 watts of power through that cable, supposedly. So you've got multiple things that you can do all at the same time, and they're hoping that that will be the answer.
I did get to see one of the 100-watt cables at Intel Developer Forum.
Did you try biting on it?
I thought about it, but you know, it was connected to 100 yeah. watts of power at the time. It was powering a rather substantial laptop at the time, and I decided to not orphan my children just yet. But it was interesting because I said, like, wait a minute, you're carrying 100 watts of power. He's like, well, you're going to have a cable that's spec'd for that. And he pointed, you know, and it was a big fat cable compared to, it was, yeah, well, even bigger than remember the first generation USB cables where you're kind of like, that's a lot of cable. Well, it was even bigger than that. And there was a fair amount of copper inside of it. Yeah. But I'm kind of curious. It seems like, you know, Intel made vague announcements at IDF that they're finally going to eliminate the cables. It's going to be a cableless world. We're going to eliminate the cable. And it's like, but just in case, we're going to make sure we can cram everything over the USB spec, which I thought was kind of funny. I was like, what?
Well, you know, everybody hates cables. And if you can just get away with one, then more power to you.
It's a good dream.
Yeah.
It's a very good dream. Not a very good dream. It's kind of funny. The same week that the Samsung, the Samsung is one of the last two drives standing in the Tech Report solid state drive endurance test. Alan did a great write-up on this, and I'm going to read the title. Samsung 840 Evo susceptible to flash read speed degradation over time. And it's interesting because people have been reporting lately. It's kind of one of those viral moments on the web where people start talking in forums and start comparing notes. But essentially, once data gets, I think, did Alan say it was about a month out? The longer you wait, basically data reads on the 840 and 840 Evo. The longer you wait, the slower they read. By about a month out, EEC is kicking in, and it's taking a considerable amount of time to sort of read these files. No one's lost any data, but it's kind of an interesting thought that because they're not sort of constantly, you know, refreshing and kicking the tires and the individual bits on the SSD, I can hear Alan cringing with my oversimplification, which, you know, saves wear and tear on the drive. But they're also having issues in that case where it just is taking a long time to open up files. Samsung's acknowledged it. You know, Alan summed it up. He said, over time, flash cell voltage, this is his theory, his hypothesis. Over time, flash cell voltages slightly drift. Flash circuitry is designed to compensate for this by varying the read voltage thresholds and using varying levels of error detection and correction mechanisms. Three, some unforeseen coordination issue between the flash and the controller is resulting in slower than normal read speeds for flash that has been storing data undisturbed for weeks or months. And the thing that really kind of brought it home for me was when Alan pointed out, you know, you can't, it's not like you can, you could actually, you know, run something like disk fresh to sort of, you know, spank the bits and keep them, you know, charged up. But if you do stuff like some friends of mine who edit videos where they store terabytes of data on SSDs, not terabytes, you know, hundreds of gigabytes of data gigabytes, on SSDs, yeah. Yes, you know, on shelves, and they pull a project down and they work on it and they put the project back on for 2 or 3 months. It could take days to open up a video project. I exaggerate probably slightly. But yeah, it was interesting. Also, Alan was, you know, strongly pointing out that no one's losing data. It's just really, really slow because the ECC, the error correction, is kicking in.
You know, and what the Samsung, best part about this is?
What's that?
This is my OS drive. And yes, just, it gets 50 meg writes on the vast majority here. 50 meg reads. I'm so happy. What was kind of interesting is that it's also thermally bound as well because the controller, it's doing the ECC on it. So if you've got a warmer case, it's going to be slower. So he has a neat little graph in there that it shows it starts reading fast, But then it gets this this big 400 gig file that they've got. And it's just slow, 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 slow. And during that slow part, and right at the end, he moved it underneath a fan. So the fan started blowing on it, and the case went down about 4 or 5 degrees. And you can see the performance actually jumped up about 5 to 10% because it was the controller was becoming thermally limited and slowing down.
I haven't thought about drive cooling in a really long time. And
yeah,
suddenly we thought it's going to be part of my life again.
Yeah, we thought we were done with that, with the 10,000 RPM Raptors.
Did you immediately like start digging around in the parts pile for a biscuit fan to point at your drive?
No, I did not.
fight it until you absolutely so positively
angry.
Have to.
Angry.
Well, it's a great drive as long as you write to it a lot. I don't know. Well, it's interesting. Samsung actually, and Samsung did respond. Says they will fix it. And let me read the exact quote, because I am always proud of a company for acknowledging, there it is. Samsung recognizes the seriousness of any potential degradation of read performance on old data. We are testing and validating the circumstances that potentially causes performance drop and will work diligently to resolve the issue. So Alan's hoping that it's something he can fix in firmware. Because if not, that would be a monster recall from hell, given the number of drives that those guys have sold. So interesting. Interesting, interesting, interesting. Also, DiskFresh is awesome.
I've never used it, but I may have to do that.
I now immediately want it to run on my machine. So it's essentially a utility that writes reading and writing each sector and making your disk more reliable for storage, which is something that giant server farms are supposed to do automatically. Probably not your local Windows box. PureEndSoftware.com/DiskFresh. Endorsed by Alan Melventano.
But that or not at least so fresh SSD.
Just write to it over and over again. Petabytes, man. Get at least a petabyte and a half out of it. Dude, we are both fans of Grados.
Yeah.
I was laughing. I was like, I was like, Grado came up in my feed again. And I was like, oh, Josh is a fan.
Why is Josh talking about that? Yeah, I saw your review of the SR60Es, and I thought that I'd been talking to some of the one of the guys from Grado, and I thought it was kind of interesting that you took a look at him and had a pretty positive review of the product, and I think I'd shown you this. I mean, I'd bought these 10 years ago. These are the original SR125s. They have been well loved. In fact, so loved that I really need to replace the ear pads badly. Badly.
I am on my third set of ear pads on my SR80s. I've replaced one of the halos from a cup. And other than that, they are still perfect. They're not the best headphones for throwing into a knapsack and beating on. A Sony, one of the folding Sony headsets is probably a much better option for that. But they sound fantastic. And those are the incredibly odd ear pads, the G cushions.
You know, when I first got these, they were so, I could only wear them for maybe an hour, hour and a half at a time. I mean, otherwise your ears just kind of got a little raw. I mean, physically. I mean, the sound was great. It didn't tire you at all. Sound was fantastic. But those ear pads, until you finally got used to them and got them a little broken in, there was something to talk about.
My ears are so big, they would just sort of leave the tops and bottoms of my ears a little numb until I figured out just how to position them.
Yeah, it's the amount of work that goes into them. It's just kind of amazing. They're real retro looking open ear design, which they're just so efficient though. I mean, they're rated at 32 ohms. You can play it on an MP3 player and it sounds great. They won't eat up your batteries like, the higher resistance type earphones. And, you know, I think PCs are finally getting to the point where, I mean, I'm looking at like the Asus Crossblade Ranger behind me that I'm doing some testing on. It's got a pretty significant amount of design work in the audio functionality, and it's to push higher end headphones and to be more accurate, to have less noise, less ring, all these things that, that audiophiles hate. But they're trying to get just integrated PC sound to a point where you're not throwing up when you, you know, put a high end, you know, set of cans on there and you're playing high bit rate content that is just pristine and, you know, still comes out crap because there's so much interference. There's just, you know, the codec is garbage. The drivers are even worse. And we're getting away from that, which is really nice. And something it's I've been waiting for a long time.
It's a good thing. I'm going to tell you about a product I have in for review in a second, but I should take a moment to thank Harry's, ladies and gentlemen. Harry's.com, promo code Twitch, oddly enough. And it's really, really cool. This is, I should say it, this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Harry's. They are a new advertiser for us, and they're a new innovative company that's disrupting an industry we've all had to pay into and endure, razors. If you have a beard like mine, you probably buy razors a lot, and you probably hate the process because I don't know about by you, but where I am, they put the razors inside of a giant, you know, plexiglass box. You know, you can easily walk out of there with like three razors for like $19.25. I saw a three pack for $32 once. I have no idea what was going on. This is pretty interesting. You know, rather than going with a cheap razor because you don't have to get the plastic, you know, box unlocked, you can go with something like Harry's. The idea that you get a great shave at a fair price. Andy and Jeff, the crew that founded Harry's, they basically want to give you a great shaving experience for a fraction of the price of other razor blades. Very clean product design, high quality blades engineered in their own factory, apparently in Germany, for sharpness and strength. And you can order online and they get delivered to your house. Beautiful packaging, very stylish. Aesthetics is not something I really think of a lot other than loud when I think about razors. But Jeff, one of the co-founders, you might know him from an eyewear brand, a glasses company called Warby Parker. And the idea is that they're going to do design, craftsmanship, value, and try to make it as personal and engaging as possible for as little money as possible. I got the Harry's Winston set engraved. It was shipped to my door. It feels fantastic. It's not, I don't really think of razors as feeling fantastic other than say, you know, my dad's vintage razor, which was broken in a terrible shaving accident that we won't discuss. But this is nice. It's nice to hold a product that you're going to use, you know, if you're, you know, a proper human being, shaving at least once a day. If you're a less proper human being, then shaving several times a week. It's nice to have something that looks good and feels good in your hand and leaves you with a nice, clean shave. It's good stuff. The Winston set from Harry's.com. Do me a favor. Check it out. Harry's.com. Harry's.com. Use the promo code Twitch to get $5 off your first purchase. Harry's.com. Promo code Twitch. And we want to thank Harry's for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Yeah, it's cool. I like having useful things delivered directly to my house so I don't have to deal with lines and finding someone with the magic key.
I always found that a little strange that, you know, around Laramie, of course, you can go and buy razors and it's not a big deal. You go to Vegas and everything's locked up and it's got anti-theft devices attached to all of it. It's like, how in the hell are these things being shoplifted that much and are they that expensive?
It's not so much they're being shoplifted that much. It's just that there's so much margin to be made on them. They don't want to give up the opportunity to make all of the money. That's my theory anyhow. It's an interesting concept. I believe the chat room somewhere is a chat room on my desktop. Oh, chat room, I have lost you again. Actually, I take that back. I should probably tell you... it was funny. He always had one loquacious one. We were talking about audio before. Have you actually heard the Dragonfly?
No.
From AudioQuest? Okay. So Let me drop a couple links in here. Look up AudioQuest Dragonfly. And if you want to hear amazing sound for not much money, it is a USB DAC, so digital analog converter. AudioQuest is primarily known for making cables. And I will be honest that they are the kind of cables that I usually mock because I am a savage. And I refuse to pay thousands of dollars for cables. But this
as
is...
As you should.
As I should, because physics. Please don't send me nasty emails, Dragonfly. But I paid $150 just out of my own pocket after hearing it at CES. It is fantastic. So it's a USB DAC with a built-in built-in amp. It sounds gorgeous. It's got like a 40-step volume control, so you don't have to deal with digital degradation of the audio signal if you raise and lower the volume, which sounds silly. It enables what they call hog mode, which allows your audio application to take over that particular audio device so that you don't have to deal with things like background system noises or other applications riding over it. And it's got a 24-bit ESS Saber DAC, which sounds utterly fantastic. It'll do 16-bit 44 hertz up to 24-bit 96K high-res stuff. I'm not the biggest fan of the high-resolution audio just because it seems expensive and I can't hear a huge amount of detail. Perhaps I just haven't found the right samples. But if you want to hear a fantastic DAC for $150, it's one of the best deals out there. And it's A, amazing. It feels really good in the hand. It's really well constructed. The audio is incredible off of it. It's driven everything I've put on it from biodynamic like DT880s down to great OSR60s and everything in between. And the sound is phenomenal. And I thought of that because Soundblaster sent us one of their new... it was fun. They sent us Soundblaster, of all people, is doing if I had a brain, I'd actually be useful, Josh, and I apologize.
It's okay.
It would be so useful if I could speak.
Well, they have a couple of things. They have a sound card that has an external amp that's just for headphones.
Yeah.
They have a couple of the USB, and I can't remember another one that it may even plug into external PCI Express. Yeah. Card typed that way. Is that what
they
you're
have a crazy.
About?
Yeah, well, it's funny because they're like, hey, you may not have heard of a company called Creative and Soundblaster. And I was like, oh, you are such a nice young PR person.
You're
Do you know about DOS and IRQ
setting?
But they have this thing called the Soundblaster Roar. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'll listen to your Bluetooth speaker. But I also asked if we could look at the Soundblaster ZXR. And I got to say... the review's going up next week. The Soundblaster Roar sounds fantastic. It's a $150 Bluetooth speaker, and I was actually shocked at how good it sounds because I hate Bluetooth speakers because most of them sound like exactly what they are, which are cheap knockoffs made in China, and half the innards are the same on half of the speakers, and they all kind of sound crufty. But the ZXR has been really interesting to play with because it's been a long time since I've had, you know, outside of a few months where I got to play with an Asus Zonar, having a dedicated PCIe audio card. So I'm still putting it through its paces. But I got to say, they built the snot out of that thing. It's clean. It's very, very clean. And they're claiming like a signal to noise ratio of 124 decibels, which is, I think ridiculous is a word I'm comfortable with for describing that level of,
fidelity.
Yeah. That's just a lot of range. The daughter board's interesting too, where it basically is, they basically have a daughter board to do optical output. You can play around with the DACs and a big volume control. And having actually built volume controls just to control my headphones off of my PC, I can say I can really appreciate a big fat audio control. Look at all those capacitors. Beautiful.
That is a lot.
Capacitors.
That's a huge amount. And look at those the headphone and the mic inputs.
Yeah, and the big old chunk of copper.
Mm-hmm. That's keeping it from everything else. Electrostatic interference. EMI, rather.
Sorry. Oh, my goodness. I think there's a debate in the chat room whether or not MonoPrice is worthy. And I'm going to say if it's good enough for Robert Heron, and his HDMI testing, it is probably good enough for pretty much everyone. I could be wrong, but yeah, Monoprice is a fantastic place to get deals on cables. Interesting.
And monitors. Although,
apparently, though, somebody's having trouble with one of their cables going out. I'm shocked. Because actually, Monoprice is, we abuse the snot out of HDMI cables, and we've yet to have one of the Monoprice cables fail. Carl Bob, every game in DOS had its own settings for video and sound in the bat file. Yes.
IRQ 5. Interrupt 7. Yeah.
Don't bring back the sad.
No. No. So, do you remember Pro Media?
Yes.
The Pro Audio Spectrum 16. That was my first standalone sound card that I installed. And boy, getting that installed was a bear. And it's a good thing that they had a support number, because I'd have never gotten it by myself.
I think that means we're both officially old enough to be like, you young people today with your Windows drivers being pre-installed don't know how much suffering plug you've avoided.
Play. Yeah.
Yes, I love plug and play from the bottom of my...
You mean I have to edit my autoexec dot...
And the good old days. 9545. Patrick, I still love Monoprice and buy from them all the time. I will still buy from them. Good. Hopefully they get you a functioning cable. Okay. So just had some problems with the micro USB connector. I think they had production problems. Oh my goodness. You wanted to play games in DOS. You had to have two sound cards and two video cards. Don't make me cry. AMD had Interwave, Great Tech, horrible installation. This is like a trip through hellish memory lane.
Well, audio has always had problems. I mean, we had the AW32, the AW64, the AW128, and then do you remember the Insonic audio PCI?
Vaguely.
And it did so well that Sound Blaster actually bought them and the design, and it turned into, I think then it turned into the Sound Blaster 128 PCI.
Oh, and, actually, I do remember that card. That was a nice board.
Yeah, they were, and it was originally Insonic. So they had always stayed with the Sound Blaster had stayed with the ISA bus, and of course that was getting phased out, but they didn't have a working PCI based sound card that actually was worth a damn. And so they bought up the competition until they could get some of their Odyssey cards out.
Something to be said for having enough money to float over the rough spots. I will say, I cannot stand 3D audio processing. It does not sound like Radio City Music Hall. I don't care what you tell me.
Because they haven't had the processing power available to do it well with HRTF type stuff.
No.
Yeah, and we're getting closer.
Oh, my goodness. And Spoon just types in the chat room, started with a 19.2K modem and a subscription to CompuServe.
I had a 9600 was my first modem.
Yeah.
Screamer.
Yep. And I actually ended up with an AOL account so I could download a piece of software to manually address my modem. Oh, my goodness. I think I'm going to call it to a close. If we're waxing down memory lane and contemplating modems, I'm going to stop before one of us makes the modem calling the ISP sound, because it just has to happen. Or maybe I've just been working with Leo for so long, I expect to hear him start making that sound, even if he's in another state. Thank you, everybody.
I have to have one last thing.
Oh, please.
The first upgrades I ever made to my first computer was a 3.5-inch drive and a serial mouse. Each was $99 a piece. Money well spent in my book.
I don't know if I can even find a picture of an XL hard card 2. And somewhere, much to my wife's horror, it is actually still in a box because it was one of the most... Oh, this is close. Okay, this is the larger version. Wait. Oh, there it is. Okay. Burke, I'm going to put the world's most annoying eBay picture into the rundown because I know you love a challenge. This was my first major hardware upgrade inside of a Compact Portable 2. It's an XL hard card, which is essentially like an ISA expansion board. It was $500 for 50 megabytes. It was all the money I had for like the next year. And click one more over and you can see just how horrible 50 megabytes of storage used to be. Oh, there it is. Pan over. That's ha- there it is. That's basically a full slot card. That's like 15 inches of board. And that's exactly what I paid for it 20 something years ago. Wow. I had no idea there was a market for these things. What a horrifying thought.
Oh, yeah.
Wish I'd known that a couple of years ago. Dip switches. Look at the dip switches. Yeah, that was my favorite thing about opening up that Compact Portable 2 to upgrade it once was realizing that they had at least four tracers correcting the motherboard that were actually like 28 gauge wire running all the way around the length of the motherboard to jump a couple spots.
Yeah.
We've come a long way.
We have.
Oh my goodness. Dude, hey man, it was a pleasure having you on the show this week.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Anything you can tease about what's coming up on PC Per this week? Or will the NDA gods smite you where you sit?
You know, I don't think we've got any NDA. I mean, we've kind of shot the big guns with the Haswell E, the GTX 980. I think we're just catching up on reviews, a couple of motherboards, mm-hmm. some video cards, obviously. But nothing, nobody's going anywhere. Tomorrow, what's his name? Jacob from EVGA mm-hmm. is showing up on a live stream at PC Per. He's going to be giving away some serious prizes, a GTX cool. 980, GTX 970, something like three X99 motherboards from EVGA, a handful of the new Torque mice. It's going to be a serious program. And Jacob's a great guy to listen to, very knowledgeable. Really passionate about his products. So go and tune in on that tomorrow. Good and stuff.
Possibly win thousands of dollars of hardware.
That would be pretty sweet. I keep trying to enter, but Ryan just keeps disqualifying me.
Employees, friends, and family of PCPer.com are not eligible to win PCPer.com events. The cruel irony. I don't know. I think it's like I have the vision of you guys like driving down to Texas with a van full of $1 million worth of hardware, just going, you know, we could just make a right, go to Oklahoma and have our own private gaming events. Man, dude, thank you again so much, ladies and gentlemen. Josh Walworth from PCPer.com. Ryan Shrout, possibly back next week, possibly doing more events. The man is on fire right now.
Yes. I'm
Patrick Norton. And we will have the review of the Seek thermal imaging camera posted along with new Create Labs projects. Those are coming up tomorrow and next week on Techzilla. And I want to thank everybody for listening, the chat room for joining in and reminding me of how much I don't miss DOS gaming, not even a little bit. And that's it for this episode of Twitch. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Josh Walworth.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.